is William Del Pilar, your conservative Latino and pioneer in the fantasy sports industry. Here with my friend, Big John. And you know, John, I wanted to call you Big John Studd.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Well, you have the height.
I have, well, not his height. He was almost 7 feet tall. I'm just 6'3".
Tall man. Yeah. And for those who don't know, Big John Studd is an icon in the WWF, WWE, and whatever else. He's even before those times when regional was bigger than
his. Right, yeah.
So how you doing, Big John?
I'm doing fine. I'm in the mood to gab tonight, William, so I hope you have some good topics on tap for tonight.
Yes, we do. The NFL owners meeting concluded this week. It was their first in-person meeting, 3 days of meetings. We've all heard about what happened at the Oscars, you know? And we have another situation of the working class paying for the rich. And that was a topic you brought to my attention. I hadn't planned on talking about it because we can get into the weeds easily with what is not a Robin Hood story. Okay, the NFL owners meeting.
Yes.
Perception over reality. The reason I bring this up is, statistically speaking, it's closer to 50-50 than dominating over time and who wins the coin toss and who wins the game. Right. Now, that's the regular season. Today, we learned something new. What do you think of the overtime, if you can explain what the new rule is?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that, Big John?
Well, there was an overtime rule that was adopted for the postseason, so for the playoffs, where each team is guaranteed a possession. And obviously, look, this was driven simply by that Buffalo Bills-Kansas City divisional game where
it was – hold on.
Yes.
Call it what it is, the 13-second humiliation.
It was yes. William, you're fond of calling it the Bills 13-second humiliation, but the truth of the matter was it was a great game. Three lead changes in the last 2 minutes, and then in overtime, Patrick Mahomes – the Chiefs got the ball. Mahomes drove him for a touchdown. Josh Allen never got to see the field again. That prompted a whole bunch of like, oh, my God, it's unfair. It's this and that. So there was this rule adopted today at the owners meeting that said, hey, for next season in the playoffs, if it gets to overtime, the guarantee is each team gets the ball at least once. If they both score a touchdown, then it becomes sudden death.
If one team, death is simply whoever scores first
after that. So I got to tell you, I don't think I like it. I think it's a half pregnant type of solution. So
what about the statistic, the 10-2 statistic there in postseason play?
That's just 12. You know what I mean? It's 12 to me is you could have quirkiness there.
Hold on. As a data guy, that number's pretty clear. 12 games in overtime in the postseason. Now, we're talking to elite quarterbacks here, Big John. And so when we're talking elite, we're talking Mahomes. Right. You know? 10 have been won by the team that won the coin toss. 7 of the 12 games were won with a touchdown on the opening possession. So I can see your point with that, you know, but still – 10 out of 12 does show elite QBs able to dominate today's defense, especially with the fact that the quarterbacks wear skirts and are so well protected. It kind of puts the defense at a disadvantage.
Well, I don't disagree with you. That's why I think the rule to go away from sudden death in overtime was probably wise, meaning that the only way the team that gets the ball first wins is with a touchdown. See, that I thought was a decent change. But this change is just ridiculous, and I'll tell you why. Defense, no matter what, is still part of the game. You play the whole game. Unless you're telling me that on every possession the offense scores, which is clearly not the case, you just have to accept the fact. In overtime, if you have to kick off, your job is to stop them or at least hold them to a field goal. See, that's the way I approach it.
That's what the coaches. This whole issue was there were two sides. The coaches were like, we don't need this rule. But, you know, right. We got to play. I can't remember what coach said, but what coach said it. But he said, we've got to play defense.
Sure, absolutely.
But it was the owners who pushed it through. And this resolution or rule change had come and gone a couple of times already. But because of the Bills game, and arguably one of the most exciting games of our lifetime.
Agreed.
You know, it easily won the change when they said, let's limit it only to the postseason.
Well, you know what they say, bad cases make for bad law, you know. Or in this case, really good games make for bad law, right? So, to be honest with you, if you want to fix overtime, I have the simplest solution. You just play an extra quarter. That's it.
Just play the extra quarter,
and if it's tied at the end of the first overtime quarter, then you go to sudden death.
That's solid, you just keep playing, right? Okay.
That would solve it.
I agree, Big John. I agree. And I'm going to have the last word here.
Sure.
These rules have been changed, but previously, the last time overtime rules were changed was because the kickers were too good. The first team to score. It no longer became about getting the touchdown. It became about we got to get to their 40 to get that 55-yard, right. So that's what was changed, and now they're changing it again. But I think your answer actually solves everything. All right, Big John, next topic. There was not a lot accomplished at these owners' meetings in terms of what came out of it, in terms of the major news being the overtime. But they are forcing diversity hires. They are forcing affirmative action on NFL teams. If you want to explain to the audience what that is, and to me, anybody who is hired because of gender or color, ethnicity, religion, or whatever, that's affirmative action. Yeah, that's probably one of my more libertarian rules, you know?
Yeah.
Or beliefs. Yeah. Explain to the audience what it is and what your thoughts are.
So basically they're coming off the Brian Flores accusations, right? Then the Rooney Rule, which meant that for every open head coaching position, you had to have at least one minority candidate, which we all know has been a laughable failure.
I wouldn't say failure, but it has not gone as they on paper.
Well, it's been a failure in the sense that the outcome was expected, meaning that teams would bring in, and I hate using the word because it'll be misconstrued, but token minority candidates. And then you get into the question, what's a minority candidate? Is it simply black? Is it Latino? Is it Asian? Is it a female? Is a female white?
No. The NFL does distinguish. The reason I disagree and the reason I'm going to say you're wrong is because we have gotten hires. Now, what you said is true also. Teams will bring in, but I don't always follow the teams. For example, the New York Giants.
Yeah.
Nobody can sit there and say, is it DeBoe? Is that who their new coach is?
Yeah, Dable.
Brian DeBoe.
Dable. D-A-B-O-L-L. Dable.
Okay. There's nobody who can sit there and say he wasn't the hottest candidate.
Sure.
That has nothing to do with race culture. So in that sense, I agree. You know, but overall, we got Mike Tom. I'm not saying I agree with the rule, but the rule has not been a failure.
Been a failure only in the sense, like, I agree with you. Look, it gave us Mike Tomlin. But guess what? Since it's called the Rooney Rule, Tomlin would have probably been hired anyway, right?
No. They did take Tomlin over the better candidate. Wizenha was in-house, had as much experience and much pedigree, and he turned the loser Cardinals into what should have been a Super Bowl winning game, but then the Cardinals became the Cardinals. So, yeah, you're right, but Tomlin did prove himself.
Yeah.
Tomlin's in a bit of a pickle, but that's a different topic. I'm not going to talk about that.
So coming out of this, what they're encouraging is that they start applying sort of the Rooney Rule, if you want to think of it that way, to offensive assistant coaches as well.
Right.
Now, why specifically offensive coaches and not defensive or special teams coaches? My guess is because they feel that's a stepping stone, or maybe they did some research and said it's more likely for minority head coaches to come from the ranks of the offensive coaches, assistants, coordinators, like an Eric Bieniemy, for example, might be the next guy in line.
Right. Big John, you're absolutely right. That's exactly why they did it. Yeah. Look at the Super Bowl, the two Wiz kids. Look at Arizona, the Wiz kid. Even the Raiders' new coach, Josh McDaniels, been in the league for 12 years, had a shot earlier, but he's seen, probably now, as one of the older Wiz kids, you know? So they feel that those Wiz kids on offense is the path to head coaches. So right. What they're doing is they're purposely putting people there. I completely disagree with it. I understand the logic. I don't think there's a racial issue with the head coaching. What happens is you have six or seven head coaches, four or five get fired. No different than four or five or six or eight white guys getting fired. If you don't win, you lose. And what happens is coaches, I believe, those coaches actually get an extra year. If it was a white guy, they probably would have been fired earlier. But because of the pressure, and I'm not saying this as a hate or love or whatever, as this is how I see it. And because that happens, to me, they get a little bit longer, which doesn't always help but create another losing season. So, for example, if I'm a black head coach and the Jets call, I'm saying, oh, he's not at home right now. Click. So sometimes they feel that, like, they're forced to take whatever job. A lot of coaches are. But like Brian Flores, that whole issue he created. Sure. You know?
And seeing as how the Dolphins have spent this offseason, it's clearly not that they're tanking again, but – specifically, I just hate anything that assumes that you have to hire someone based on a class designation. It's just horrible. And listen, as a libertarian, I truly believe this. It demeans the individual. Look at the Supreme Court nominee, this woman, Ms. Brown, right? Mrs. Brown.
Brown? Affirmative action hire? Yeah.
So, as far as I could tell, she's one of the least objectionable court nominees from the left.
Let me finish.
I said from the left, okay?
Oh, yeah, from the left, they love her.
No, but I'm saying she's one of the least objectionable from the left. But my point being is, she could have been another Antonin Scalia. It wouldn't have mattered because of the way she was brought into the position. When Joe Biden said the next Supreme Court justice will be a black woman. Right? It doesn't mean that all black women are unqualified. Certainly it doesn't. This woman has been a judge at every level. So clearly she has qualifications. The truth of the matter, though, is now all anybody will do is think of her as the affirmative action hire. You are devaluing the individual. Same thing goes with NFL with the Rooney Rule. How will any black coach or Latino coach know if they got there because they were – on their merits, or if they got there to satisfy a quota? So I think
they won't. That's just it. They never will.
Right.
And in fact, Big John, you're right. Yeah. I don't mean to cut you off, but at the end of the day, I think you're correct because I will never look at that SCOTUS appointment as legitimate in the sense she's qualified. Why? Because they said it. We're going to hire a black woman, period. That's the qualification. So from there became finding the one with the most ideological beliefs of their party. Judge Joe Brown, he's a black TV judge, retired, highly, highly educated, came from nothing. I'm speculating, but when I look at him, I'm like, this guy's probably worth 30, 40, 50 million. You know, those TV shows, look at Judge Judy. Right. They do a lot in terms of finances when they're popular. But he's condemning this pick pretty much because he's like, look, you know, what about this conservative judge that Biden destroyed, or what he did to Clarence Thomas, or the Latino, the one in the second Bush, I can't remember his name. So a lot of people are seeing it for what it is, an affirmative action. But we've digressed from this sport. I think what makes the Rooney Rule slightly different is there's proof it has worked. The problem is, as with any affirmative action law, and technically speaking, there are no affirmative action laws. Corporations have kind of made this law for themselves to play it safe. If we hire somebody who's black, qualified or not, we've got a black person hired, so they can't come after us. So there's technically no affirmative action laws, but this is what it boils down to. The problem with all of those is you don't know when to end them because of the political pressure. So they could work magically, but they would never end because of the pressure. The moment you talk about it, you're going to be called a racist. You know, as you're done, I'll give you the last word and then we'll move on.
Yeah, and I would disagree in the sense that I don't think they work. I think that any time you get into someone's business from a place of central authority, it never works. It never works. It never works on who to hire. It never works.
So you're saying you completely, your libertarian belief, you completely disagree with type of quota, affirmative action. No, I get you.
Get rid of it. No.
All right, I can't argue that, Big John. You and I actually, I try to look at the big picture and rationalize, but just because everything I said doesn't mean I would implement it. I'm like you. I'm like, no. Because we have laws in place, and the problem is we don't follow those laws, or we and it's always a politician creating new laws to have his name on it. All right, onside kicks. This is a rule that has not garnered a lot of pub, but as a statistical monster, I think you would appreciate it. Mm. So, for the audience, the onside recovery numbers dipped to 7.8% before last year. And last year, the NFL made a permanent rule that a team may have only 9 players in the box when receiving an onside kick. That was implemented before last year because it was 7.8%. Onside kicks became hard to get.
Right.
What do you think happened, Big John? Did the number rise or fall, and what was the rule?
It probably went up.
Dipped to 7.8% from 2018 to 2020 to jump to 13.5%. It almost doubled.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all. It doesn't surprise me at all because, listen, NFL head coaches at all levels get paid to take advantage of whatever rules are out there. That's their job, right?
It's everybody's job.
Right? So it took 2 years for them to say, okay, look, we can't do the whole crashing all 11 men on one guy. We're not allowed to do that anymore. We have to line them up. What is it, like only 7 on one side to kick off? Or, you know, you can't have more than 6 guys on one side of the tee. You know, there's all these rules that were legitimately, I think, from a legitimate concern for player health. Because with that study that showed that the most injuries take place on kickoffs and onside kicks, right?
Yeah, post kickoffs, yeah.
So, fair enough. But at the same time, what have we seen in the last year or two, specifically, is special teams coaches finding kickers doing weird kicks. Like, don't forget that kick that the Cowboys did against the Falcons to get the ball back and win the game. That weird I think Zuerlein called it a watermelon kick. I called it the helicopter, where the ball just kept spinning flat on the turf, kept spinning. And nobody on the Falcons knew what to do, right? They just kept staring at it. Now you have the different type of kick that's sort of like a one high hopper that they try to put towards the middle of the field instead of the corners, so that both sides, even though they start out 5 of either side, they can converge, right? So special teams coaches have caught up to the rule.
So what you're saying is it's become a strategy,
yes,
not only on the field, but also finding that unique kicker. So it's no longer just finding that soccer kicker. They're looking for a kicker with
they're looking for those guys doing those YouTube trick videos, you know, where the guys spin the ball.
The hacky sack
guys. There's guys, I don't know if you've seen them. There's guys who do NFL place kicks and punts doing tricks. Like, they'll do a drop kick. They'll spin it on their head, drop it, and kick. Like, all this weird shit.
Big John.
Yeah.
There was a guy from one of the I jokingly say, since we're a politically incorrect show, from one of the white countries up north with all the snow. I can't remember. Yeah. One of those Scandinavian or region. And the Lions gave him a tryout. This was maybe 10 years ago, remember?
Yeah,
and
it was a YouTube video. Yeah.
With all those, I mean, those kicks were like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, he got people to watch preseason games and watch him kick that were fans. I watched it. I wanted to see the highlights. And obviously he sucked.
So, like, am I surprised the percentage went up? No, it's still 13%, right? 14% roughly. So the success rate, think of it this way, it's less than 2 out of 10 times.
Right.
So it's still a low percentage play, but I think at least it gives your team hope, which at the end of the game, that you to keep fan interest, to keep ratings up, that's what you want. You want
it
if you're winning.
It's 2-tier, Big John. You hit it on the head. The owners, from the fans' perspective and for great television, that's why they're like, yeah, we're keeping this. And the coaches, from that strategy and increasing their odds, don't mind this rule. I'm sure there are some coaches that hate getting put in that situation.
Sure.
The smart ones, they prepare for it.
Right.
All righty, Big John. Let's move on to something I know that's dear to your heart, and that is, oh, I just got stabbed by the tax man.
Oh.
You know, at KFFL, when I used to run that, my guys will tell you, yeah, leave William alone. It's tax season. Because I was angry at the world because there's nothing you can do with it. But when I show the company, I want the audience to know this. We paid, I want to say like 52 or 54% of the money in taxes. We only got like 48% after all the taxes from the lowest level to the highest level. You know, and I was so angry because we were working at a Dave Garage. I mean, we had an office, but we were a small company. And to think that this is the American dream, and, you know, we always talk about the American dream and how it's out there for everyone.
Sure.
But this is where I agree with you, Big John, and I agree with you 1,000%.
Yeah.
The United States government kills the American dream through taxes.
Yes.
They keep working class people working class when you're taking half your taxes.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, we're talking about the stadium issue, and you brought this to my attention.
Yeah.
So I'm going to introduce it, but let you take it away. First of all, Buffalo just agreed to a new stadium, $1.4 billion. However, the taxpayers are paying $850 million of it, 61% of the cost, not to mention the upkeep and all that.
Right.
So let me hand it off to you, Big John, because I know as a libertarian, this one is for you.
Yeah, this is – thank you. This is literally one of the greatest acts of theft ever perpetrated on the American public, and it's repeated. In other words, I'm trying to understand why a private entity is getting its offices built, essentially, on the taxpayer dole. For what reason? What are they – so
I – John, you know the reason. We got to – I mean, I hate to say it,
I
agree with you. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say it's because the municipality, in this case Buffalo, Erie County, the state of New York – they see the bills as being a jobs creator, a jobs maintainer, a revenue producer. So they're like, we got to keep them in town. But here's my libertarian mode of thinking. If the only way you think your government works is by stealing from your citizens, which is what taxes are, and giving them to a private corporation, which is what the NFL and the Bills are.
With antitrust exemption.
Yeah. You're not governing correctly, right?
Right.
So why are the taxpayers – and here's the thing where taxpayers are dopey. I'm sure if you polled those idiots up in Buffalo, they would tell you, yeah, we're more than happy to get this bond going so we can keep our bills. The Bills almost made the Super Bowl, man. We want to keep them. Here's what you should be saying.
Well, John – there was a Twitter poll, obviously, online, but with 33,000 people voting, there's some truth to it. Approximately 84% plus said that taxpayer money should not be used to finance football stadiums.
Okay.
And that's what they say.
Yeah, I'm happy.
But not in the cities they're in.
Yeah, that's what I would say, too. Good. Look, the truth of the matter is that in a free market, you would quickly find out which communities really wanted those teams in their community, right? You would find out where it made sense in terms of profit and loss for teams to be. Now, if the NFL, for whatever reason, says, hey, you know what? It's good for our business model to have a team in a market like Buffalo. Let's assume that's the case. Well, if that's the case, the NFL.
LA, in New York. Huh?
Or LA, LA or New York, wherever.
That's one of the rules. We got to be in those markets for TV.
Fair enough, but Buffalo's really not New York. I don't know what people from Buffalo will tell you. But as a real New Yorker, Buffalo's not New York. Syracuse, those places are Canada as far as New Yorkers are concerned, right? But my point is, if the NFL feels that it's necessary to have a team in Buffalo, the NFL should build that stadium. The Bills should build that stadium. Because I heard someone say, well, the state will own the stadium. Yeah, but so what? They own the stadium. What are they going to do with it? The only thing
in their defense, I did a little research on Petco Park decades ago. First of all, this is a true story. When they were fighting for Petco Park, the Padre Stadium, the national world, the America itself doesn't realize. I was here. I saw the underpinnings, but that was a multi-year battle. And they were just lying from the start. lying from the ground. And when I say lying, I don't mean notorious bad, we're going to screw you lies. They were just lying to the public as to why they needed it, why they wanted it. But here was the lie. I guess what I'm referring to as the lie is, no, we love the city. We're going to stay in this city regardless. After the vote went down, he went to Boston as one of their big wigs here. VP or something out here said, oh, yeah, you were voting to keep the Pirates in town. You know, it was kind of like they had made their decisions. And my issue is, I don't know where Milton Friedman falls on this, but I would think he would agree with me. As much as we loathe it, that's part of capitalism too.
What is? Know? What is?
Meaning capitalism opens the door for companies to do this.
Meaning, no, that's not Milton. Milton Friedman would definitely not agree with you on that.
No, I'm not saying he agrees, but what he would say is, that's part of capitalism.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, because
capitalism, there's one basic rule. I'm not talking from the books. I'm talking about from real life. Have you practiced it? Have you owned a business? Have you helped my uncle with his business? So it's in capitalism, the first thing we learn is it never hurts to ask, or we're not going to do it because of this or that. Well, why should we do it that way? It's not ethical, or it's not right, or it's not how it's meant to be. Well, it's because there's no law against us doing it. If we don't do it, somebody else will.
Well, I agree with you in that sense, but here's the one exception, and this is where someone like Uncle Milty would definitely take exception to. When you deal with government, you're dealing with the only body in this country that legally can use force against other people.
In other words,
the government, what happens when you don't pay your taxes, William? One of two things will happen. Someone will come and throw you in a cage.
And then charge you penalties.
Right. Or someone will kill you. And like,
I don't know about kill you. But
no. People don't want to hear it, right? But the IRS is one of the few things that don't – they're one of the few federal agencies, if not the only one, that doesn't need a warrant to get into – to jump into your house to take their money, right? They don't need a warrant.
Oh, yeah. They can confiscate it without you having been convicted.
Or they could just break down your door. Literally, they don't need a warrant, right? So here's what I'm trying to get at. Like, anything that uses the government to further private business needs is immoral. It's not part of capitalism. The closest thing
John, who votes these politicians in? And
doesn't
who can
matter.
Vote them out, but they don't.
It doesn't matter. That's why I told you.
My problem with the libertarian belief is there's no accountability. It's like,
there is accountability. The accountability is that government should not be involved in business.
No. That's what I'm talking about. It's not government. We're talking politicians, and we talk about the process. People vote for those politicians. So the mechanisms are there. It's just nobody votes these politicians out. So one, you can assume that people are stupid. Quiet. Be quiet on that one. Two, you can assume that the people like what their politician is doing and are approving of it. And in our system, which is based off of capitalism, but the foundation of our laws are being constitutional and from where? England common law. To me, it kind of falls in those gray areas where I'm with you, John. I agree with you. But looking at it, I'm like, there's no law. These are hard truths that I'm referring to. There's no law to stop it.
Well,
so that is capitalism. You know, whether we want to admit it,
it's not
part of capitalism.
It's something called cronyism, not capitalism.
It's called crony capitalism.
Yes, crony capitalism.
Yeah,
cronyism.
But it's still an offshoot. Just because it doesn't fall into what we want it to, it's kind of like in movies or in real life. If we don't know, you know, we think we have our sciences. We think we have all the answers. And then that virus mutates into something else they had never considered. That's how life works in everything.
Well, yes and no, William, because I'll ask you this. In a socialist government, even if – pretend you're a socialist. Socialists will tell you that it's wrong for the government, for example, to throw dissidents in gulags, right? So even a hardcore socialist will tell you – yeah, you shouldn't throw a dissident, especially in this country. You shouldn't throw a dissident in the gulag.
But hold on. I would ask you this. Does socialism give people a choice?
Well, socialists will tell you yes, right? We know better, but socialists...
Has any government that's socialist been structured in their utopian way, as they always say?
No.
It's structured where the few. We are representative.
Our constitution also is a negative rights form of government, which means, yeah, the majority rules, but that doesn't mean they infringe on my rights. So building a stadium in Buffalo on the taxpayer dime is infringing my rights because it doesn't serve any governmental purpose. You're not defending the nation. You're not enforcing laws.
Each state constitution is different, but I get what you're saying. But technically, I would not be shocked if there's. You should see the California's constitution. Some of the stuff in there.
Yeah. But here's the problem, William. Now that Buffalo, what's next? It took all of literally 2 hours before Tennessee announces, "Hey, you better build us a stadium now."
This is true. How much?
You want us to do? Give us $500 million for a new stadium.
Hold on. Our southern friends are a little bit more economical. It's only $500 million.
Half a billion bucks. That's what we need. Come on, man.
But John, here's the kicker. The Titans only wanted a renovation. It's the politicians. You know, this is important because what about this now? It's not the owner or the team that said, you got to do this, got to do this, you got to do this. They just wanted a renovation. That's it. It was the politicians who saw the ability to have the big concerts, other venues,
I mean, look, it's much like the pandemic supposed stimulus, right? First with Trump, then with Biden. Like, right, here's $2 trillion for stimulus. Then why is everybody only getting $2,000? Like 330 million adults by 2000 isn't 2 trillion, okay?
Right.
It's 2 billion. Where did you get that extra run up? All that went to pork. All that went to cause the inflation we're seeing now. I take umbrage with your assertion. The fact that the Titans said, we only want a renovation, and the government says, no, we'll build you a new one. Here's the problem. Why should the Titans expect the government to do anything for them?
Oh, if somebody's going to give you a freebie, John, are you going to say no if it's something you want? Hold on. Your car could be 4 years old and you love it. Then somebody says, Big John, I got something to handle that car. And you go, oh, yeah?
Yeah, listen.
I've got this car I'm going to give you, Big John.
Yeah, listen.
It's a realistic example.
Listen, if the municipality went to the Titans and said, we want to build you a new stadium, then you're right. They'd be idiots not to take it. But at the
They're
same
not saints, I get it.
Right, but at the same time, anyone who disagrees that it is not the place of government in any sort of construct that the Constitution was founded under, you can't expect governments to buy. Like, what's next? Seriously, what are we expecting the government to provide? Look, it's like Foxconn, right? Why? What's next? Eminent domain? We're going to take people's property to build the stadium? That's next. If it hasn't happened already, that's next, right?
You know, John, it's going to get worse until we fix. It's a completely different topic, but until we fix our education system to teach people to be critical thinkers, and I'm not talking about just in one section.
Yeah.
That's from elementary
to
high school to college. It's a learned trait. But once you gain that ability, I mean, look at you and I. There's stuff we shouldn't know about. And we're just average Americans who actually read and try to understand. I guess what I'm trying to say is we try. So we
That's
succeed.
Why public schooling should be abolished, William.
Exactly. I agree with you. And even though I've given you hard times on both of them, I agree across the board.
Yeah.
Every topic, we disagree, but I agree with your foundation because you're right.
And let's end it on this, William. Let the people remember this one sentence. Taxation is theft.
Give me liberty.
Just remember that.
Death.
Taxation is theft under all circumstances.
All right. I want your for the audience, they did pass a couple of injury data resolutions, and one was mandating all clubs use approved sensors to collect player data. And that'll create better construction of, say, helmets, things like that.
Yeah.
And the other one was a requirement for all linemen, tight ends, and linebackers to wear a padded cover known as a guardian cap. And that's to avoid concussion. Both smart moves. There's not much to talk about here. We both agree with it, but what's your word on that?
Yeah, I don't disagree with it. Again, I'm for maximum choice. So if like, at the same time, I also understand liability. So, yeah, if they want to wear the kazoo helmets and to prevent concussions, absolutely.
Right.
Here's trivia for you, William. Who was the first guy to wear a kazoo helmet in the NFL? Let's see if you can pick this out. I remember who it was. It was free safety Mark Kelso. If you remember him on the Bills, he was their captain for a while. But he wore something that looked like he had a foam covering on his helmet. And he was the first one who started wearing a special helmet, I think, specifically designed because he was getting a concussion every other game.
That's right. Yeah. A poor guy. I hope he's doing well. All right, John. We know there was a big trade of Tyreek Hill. The Cheetah was sent to Miami. That had to do with Drew Rosenhaus demanding he be the highest paid player. Thus, the Chiefs just really couldn't afford it. Now, the Chiefs are supposedly making some serious calls, and they're ready to package something together to get a top-tier receiver if one is available. Any remorse from them with the Tyreek Hill trade, or do you think they just realized we just don't have it with our current core?
Well, I'll tell you, I heard Andy Reid talk about this earlier today, and he said, look, there's no animosity towards Tyreek Hill. He wanted to get paid. We couldn't afford him. So we maximized what we could get in return for him. See, to me, that is a great statement of free market principles. The guy thought he was worth X. We thought he was worth Y. We negotiated. We couldn't get there. So what did we do? We maximized our value for him. Perfect. That's the way it should work.
Well, that's the PR talk, at least, and I agree with you.
Well, yeah, and look, to be honest with you, Drew Rosenhaus played hardball. The timing was horrible. Had the Chiefs done
timing was horrible by 1 week.
Yeah.
Like
you said, if they had just signed him before Devontae Adams got his money, then they would have had him at that roughly $19-20 million a year.
You know what? Big John, before we go to the next topic, though, I do think Devontae Adams is a better overall receiver. I'd rather have him. If I needed one big play and I had the arm, give me Hill every time. But if I need a football player for a game, give me Devontae Adams, who's a more complete player.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, they're 1A, 1B.
Like, exactly. Yeah, they are close, but people just assume Hill is better because – speed. Well, you know, you got to be a great blocker. You got to run tight routes. It's not just about, and I'm not saying he doesn't do that, but Devontae Adams has perfected himself into a machine.
Yeah.
Big John, there's a rumor going around. Ooh. Oh, down in Dolphin Land, they're going to upgrade the QB position with an old legend. The football rumors are out. Tom Brady to the Dolphins is going to happen in a massive trade. What have you heard?
I haven't heard anything outside of what you've heard. Honestly, I think this is some sort of practical joke that originated in New England. I think the original story started with the reporter who broke the news that Tom Brady was going to end up in Tampa Bay. So I think that's why people are giving it legitimacy. Look, I don't know if it's true or not. If it is true, I can't even imagine that Tampa Bay would do it. They hold his rights. So if Brady retires, he's got to stay retired for the length of his contract, basically. If he comes back and he says, I want to play for the Dolphins, it's up to the Buccaneers. They'll have to trade him. Seeing as how much the Dolphins already paid to get Armstrong and Edmonds and Mostert and Hill, I don't know how much draft capital they have to make a trade that would justify Tampa Bay sending Brady.
Let me cut you off here, Big John, because you're taking this answer to scientific depths in intellectual analysis.
Of course. That's what I do.
But you did it so well, and I'm thinking – this man could be a politician, or we see him as the most honest guy around. Because you gave an actual realistic answer if it was a legit question. Yeah. But the reason I brought this up is because I'm a political junkie. I was involved in the political world. And to hear Coach Mike McDaniel go, and watching him at the press conference, go, that's what you call fake news.
Maybe Trump started it. Maybe Trump started it.
Maybe, but the point is John, that's just, for me, I mean, you were so polite, God bless you, but to me, had you asked me that, I go, what you talking about, Will?
Yeah, I don't think it's real. Like I said, I don't think it's a real, I don't think it's a legitimate rumor. It's just somebody who I think, given that.
No, John, the real discussion, and I want your comment, and then we go, the real discussion is, how does something as out there as that gain traction? Your response, and we'll move on.
Sure. I'll give you a Mark Twain quote, I think. It's much easier to fool people than to convince them they've been fooled. So it's easier to set up a lie that people want to believe in than to actually face up to the fact. So,
you know, that's true.
Yeah.
But here's what I will add to it. And the reason that is able to work is because we've come to realize – that when we were young kids, the classifieds had the legit section and they had a CD section.
The back page.
Yeah, but that's what social media is made up in terms of seediness and dumbness and everything. And not because people are stupid. Once again, we go at 100 million miles an hour now because we got so much to do. We don't pause to think.
You know? Well, critical thinking, like you said.
Politics has transversed into pop culture and sports.
Right. So what is actually the case is what you said. People aren't critical thinkers. And I'm not saying everyone needs to be, oh, my God, I'm spending 30 minutes, an hour to deep dive into it. They don't need to do that.
Sure they do. Everybody goes to the bathroom.
But here's what I would say to people. Assume that everything you read is false and then work your way back from there. That's one easy way of doing it. So when you hear a rumor,
it's the smart way.
Yeah, that's Brady to the Dolphins. You'd like, wait, why? How?
He just came out of retirement. Now he's going to the Dolphins?
Yeah, exactly. How? Why is he going to the Dolphins?
Like you said, it's a simple question. And the first question is, it to me should be the first question for everyone. Why would the Bucks do that?
Yeah.
And that question is like that non-starter, and then we move on. All right, Big John, let's get into some Will Smith. And Chris Rock. As we know, the Oscars have been a terrible show.
Yes.
Terrible. Ratings disaster. Nobody cares. And part of it is because of the political culture. But the other part is the political culture going too far. And what I'm saying, Big John, is those actors, they can do what they want, et cetera, et cetera. But now the industry itself has become the actor's ideology. So nobody's going to see many of these movies. So, and the reason I say that is that's caused a big groundswell of losing viewers because there's no interest. The actors, and we've become a fragmented society.
Right.
I disagree if you don't agree, but I believe we've become such a fragmented society. It's not like you and I with four channels, if you count PBS. The Oscars was a big event.
Right.
Now, there's 20 other events going on. But I'm going to give it here to you to get your full 100% thoughts, but let me set it up here. For the audience that may not realize this, and I think Big John, many may not, who don't follow entertainment as a junkie do, because Will Smith is like your all-American guy. You know, Jada Pinkett, it's like your American couple. And they're in an open marriage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And as a sailor, I'm not ashamed, but I'm not proud. But I've seen a lot. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh, my. You know? I mean, anybody's going to go, oh, my. But I've seen that.
Yeah. Know?
And it was initially monogamous. But off camera, somebody used the C word, cuck, in reference to Will Smith. But that's part of how some people look at an open marriage. And what happened was, and Jada, his wife, had an affair. That's how I guess it all snowballed.
Snowball in these cases.
But the reason all this came out is she did not like how Will Smith was being seen as an idiot, having a wife step out on him. So, and the reason I set this up is because this is important. And do you want to take it away, John, or you want me to keep going?
Sure. No, that's fine. So, yeah, you kind of gave the background okay in terms of Will Smith. Look, Will Smith for years used to be the black guy that white people loved. right? Because he was the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He was a rapper who was non-threatening. He was always rapping about positive lyrics. He never said
to put it in context. Yeah. At one time, he was America's leading movie maker in terms of dollars.
Yeah, yeah. He was one of America's leading men. And like I said, his appeal went across racial lines. He wasn't just black famous, to use the quote. He was famous.
Oh, man, I love him. Did you love him?
I'm very indifferent towards him. Like, I don't love him.
Does
he
talk like anything?
I don't love him. I don't hate him. He's just, you know, he is what he is. And look, he's a contemporary of ours. He's 52 or 53, roughly right around our age. So he's a contemporary of our generation, all right? So, but these things about his marriage, look, it's a – by most objective standards, it's a weird family, right? So you've got the kids who at any given point are either gay, pansexual, fluid.
But before America, Big John, yeah. Big John and I do not claim to come from functional families. We had our own dysfunction. But this is taking it to another level.
That's what I meant. Like, on an objective scale, if you don't think they're weird, they're at least – like, interesting, if you want to use that word, right? So the kids are all over the place.
They're not out there. They're out there.
They're out there. Will Smith, before he got married, there were always rumors about his sexuality. Now, mind you,
I had no clue.
I don't care one way or another, honestly. It didn't affect me at all. But there were rumors that he was possibly gay. And I want to be very careful. I'm not saying this. This is rumors that were out there.
Then, well, come on now, with the nickname of Fresh Prince from Bel-Air.
Whatever. But the other thing to keep in mind is also that when he did get married, and then the whole thing about the open relationship, it blew up in his face on live TV, basically, with the Jada Pinkett interview. I don't remember the guy she was banging on the side, but it just came out.
Good looking guy. I looked him up today.
It came out during an interview with Will Smith in the room. And you look, that even if you're in an open relationship, why are you publicizing it? Why do people have to know? What are you trying to be the poster child for this? I mean, I don't understand why this had to be public. Patrice O'Neill used to say, do your dirty in private. You know, do your dirty in private. No matter what you're into, just do it in private. You don't need to, you know, which is always what libertarians say. Do whatever you want. We don't care. Just don't rub it in our face. Anyway.
America, Patrice O'Neill is a great late comedian.
Yes, the late great, one of my top three comedians, and the top two are Carlin and Lenny Bruce, and not Carlin, Richard Pryor and maybe Lenny Bruce for different reasons. But anyway, so during a break in the official U.S. telecast, but this was captured on the live satellite feed, which goes out to other nations.
Australia got it live.
Japan, Australia, right? during the break, Chris Rock comes out, and being a comedian, and people will remember he's done this before. Like two or three years ago, when Jada Pinkett was boycotting the Oscars for being too white, if you remember that whole hashtag thing. What was Chris Rock's joke? He goes, Jada Pinkett Smith boycotting the Oscars is like me boycotting Rihanna's panties. Neither one of us was invited. You know what I mean? Right? So he's always gone back and forth with them. So the fact that he looked at her and said, oh, Jada, glad to see you, looking forward to seeing you in G.I. Jane 2, which of course made reference to Demi Moore's character who had the jarhead look. She shaved her hair and everything, right? Now, Jada's
still training. But
Jada Pinkett Smith has alopecia. Now, that
alopecia causes balding, right?
Among other things, it's an autoimmune disorder. So, yeah, she's bald, but she shaved her head to own it. You know, like, I'm not going to have patches of hair. I'm just going to shave the whole thing and own it. So that was her choice or whatever. So he made a joke about it. If you watch the tape close, and here's why I think this is like a pro wrestling work. I'm not 100% convinced that this was a real thing, but let's assume that it was, okay? So I'm stating up front, I don't think it was real, but let's assume it was. When he made the joke, Will Smith is very clearly seen laughing. Like, he laughed at the joke.
Exactly!
Jada Pinkett Smith also very clearly rolled her eyes. Like, you know, like one of those. Then the next thing you know, you see Will Smith walking up to the stage, doesn't say a word, while Chris Rock is doing things. Hey, brother, come on, what's up? You know, not panicking. And he gets slapped. He gets bitch slapped, to be perfectly clear. Boom. And then when he turned around and walked away, Will Smith was still smiling.
Smirking,
smiling, I'm not sure. And then when he got back to his seat, he started yelling profanities at Chris Rock. Poor Chris Rock was like, hey, what's going on? It was a joke. It was a G.I. Jane joke. And Will Smith said, keep my wife's effing name out of your mouth. And then he repeated it again, but using his angry black rapper voice. Keep my wife's name out of your mouth, you know, or whatever. So, weird stuff. Compounded by the fact, no security, no police, no guards, no bodyguards. If you think Chris Rock is walking around anywhere without at least two guys, 6'8", following him around, or the same thing with Will Smith, where were those guys? Now, I didn't expect them to jump on the stage because nobody knew if it was an act or not. But afterwards,
you're not gonna
do something afterwards. And then the sycophantic.
No. The showrunner would have known if it was an act or not because they do have they have rehearsals.
Right. But I'm saying, like, the Academy itself, let's assume it's real. You're still going to give Will Smith the award? You're not immediately going to say, we don't condone violence? And that's the part of this, William, and I know there have been so many different takes, but to me, here's the number one take. You don't respond to words with violence. I don't care who it is. And Will Smith is
just. I think there's a gray area, but this was not one of them.
Area you're talking about is something the Supreme Court labeled fighting words. Like if I say to you, "Hey, William, I'm going to come over here and beat you senseless and choke you to death," them's fighting words, as the old saying goes, and you might reasonably be expected to physically defend yourself. However, me saying your wife looks like G.I. Jane is nowhere near that standard. And Chris Rock is a goddamn comedian, too.
It wasn't derogatory, it was just a straightforward joke.
But here's my point. Even if it was derogatory, let's assume it was, it's still not a reason to hit somebody. People have to accept this. Like, what does this mean? Are stand-up comedians now targets in clubs when they offend somebody?
No,
is
John,
it okay
you're right.
to slap somebody?
Here's something else, too. We can mix it all up. It's a final topic. Have a little fun with it. But Shannon Sharp came out and said it is faithing in the Latino culture. There's a lot of similarities.
I know what you're going to say, and I get it.
And in Latino culture, it's like when you slap somebody – it's like you're not even worthy of getting into a fight with or getting punched.
That's why it's called a bitch slap.
Yeah, you know, exactly, because the stereotype of it, which is an ugly stereotype, is keep your place, woman. Yeah. That's kind of like, you know, you're my woman. I own you. That's a terrible stereotype, but a terrible belief, but it's a stereotype.
Same thing in the gay community, from what I understand.
Yeah. And so it's probably more universal than cultures want to give it. You know? But at the end of the day, to me, that's what makes it worse. And what's your take with Shannon Sharp? Because I'll be honest. I got angry. I got angry at Chris Rock. Because I'm like, I'm 5'7".
Yeah.
You would knock my block off.
Yeah.
But if something like that, and we were in that situation, I guess what I'm trying to say is, even when I know I'm going to get my ass kicked,
yeah,
I'm going to go up there, you know?
Yeah,
so
look.
I'm angry at him.
Yeah.
He's Sharp.
I hear you, and I saw the Shannon Sharp clip, and I agree. Look, I understand what Shannon Sharp is saying. I also fully understand his point of, oh, man, even though we shouldn't be viewed in this way, they represent the black community up there, and look what they did. Like, this is an excuse for every racist in the country to look at him and say, see, them blackies, you can't give them anything nice. Look at them. They're slapping each other, you know.
Shannon Sharp saying that, not Big John.
Right. So what I meant is I even understood Shannon Sharp's point on that, right, to some extent. I don't agree with him that Chris Rock should have somehow retaliated.
He wasn't saying Chris Rock should have retaliated per se. He's just saying how the culture is.
Right.
Know?
Well, if Shannon Sharp,
what he would have done.
Well, yeah, but that's what I was going to say. Shannon Sharp said if he had done that to me, it's on, no matter where we are. Yeah. Right?
That's what I'm saying. You know, you do that to me, you're not making it off stage.
Well, good. I mean, kudos to Chris Rock for if it was, again, I emphasize this, if it was real and not stage, kudos to Rock for maintaining his composure and remaining a comedian throughout it, which I love stand-up comedians as a genre. I love them as personalities. So the fact that he was able to maintain that professionalism as a stand-up, many props to him.
I agree, but there's also a big part of me that believes he didn't do that because he was scared bleepless, you know?
Well, he's smaller. He's smaller than
exactly, Rose, exactly. And let me say this about Chris Rock. He has actually aged well. Very dignified look in that touch. Yeah. He's always playing that skinny, you know,
punk
nerdy.
Yeah.
So, because that's the first time I've seen him in a long time.
Well, Will Smith has also been in training for a lot of those action movies. I think he's bigger than him. He was certainly taller than him. And I think he's beefier than him. But you're right. Like, first of all, Will Smith isn't rolling up on someone my size or, like, someone The Rock size or, you know, like, there's
which a brings up the question. Yeah. Big John, would he have done this to any of the following hosts? I actually checked out their list.
Okay.
There's only one woman I would include on this, even though I didn't, but I don't think he would have done it to Whoopi. She would have knocked his ass out.
Or Rosie O'Donnell or any one of them. But, yeah, right.
Alec Baldwin. You think he would have done it to Alec Baldwin?
No.
Steve Martin.
Well, let me just say this. He wouldn't have done it to any white guy. He wouldn't have done it to any white guy because it would have been the end of him in Hollywood. Whether we want to admit it or not,
I don't think. I mean, he could be right, but I don't want to believe that.
If he slugged a white guy, and especially an older white guy, somebody older than him.
Oh, I think anybody older. I mean,
yeah, but especially a white guy in Hollywood. Oh, yeah, no, he'd be done.
No, I think it depends. Had he slugged Frazier, he'd still have a great working career. Kelsey Grammer, something like him.
Well, but, Kelsey Grammer's.
I don't think race is. I can see with the culture, but in that time, if he really believed what he was doing, let's just go on that premise. It wouldn't have mattered what color guy up there.
No, if he was angry, you're right. It wouldn't have mattered.
We both agree that we think it's staged. There is a brother on here. Because I was like, my list, you destroyed it all. But Richard Pryor, would he have done that to Richard Pryor?
No, he never would have done that to Richard Pryor. First of all, Richard Pryor would have cut him. Excuse my
language. Look at Big John getting excited.
I'm sorry.
Turning into William.
I'll bleep that out. I'll bleep it out in post. But here's the thing. Richard Pryor grew up in a brothel. Richard Pryor grew up around mobsters. Like, if you ever listen to his stand-up where he worked for Italian mobsters and they were all telling him how they like to kill people, and they were like, hey, Richie, come here. I stuck an ice pick in a guy's face. You know, listen to his routines. Those are not put-ons. He grew up in some rough, rough environment. So Will Smith is not rolling up on Richard Pryor. Now, I'm assuming you're talking about the Richard Pryor before he got MS, right?
Unless there's another Richard Pryor, you know?
No, Richard Pryor, he would never do that to, never.
Yeah, and that's the whole point is, that's what got me so angry.
He picked on the little guy.
Exactly.
He was the perfect guy to pick on if it was real, because he's not fighting back. Like someone said, so there's a meme out there with The Rock saying, hey, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, saying, hey, Jada, you look like G.I. Jane, and then they cut to the other part of me of Will Smith pointing at him like the Fresh Prince, like, you know, like, that's funny. Yeah, who's going to roll up on The Rock, right? Or any of those guys, you know, any of those other action stars. He picked on a skinny comedian. That's it.
Now, Smith came out and apologized. First, I thought he gave his greatest performance ever when he accepted the Oscar, crying and apologized to the audience, but not The Rock.
Right.
He came out today and apologized to Rock. It's not really a legit question to ask you because we both think it's staged, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
But let's say it wasn't. Do you think that's enough apology to put it on Instagram to Rock? Hey, Chris, no. I'm sorry.
No, because again, if I'm Chris Rock, I didn't do anything to get hit. It's up to Rock whether he, or not he chooses to forgive him, but from the Rock, from it's up to Chris Rock to choose to forgive him or not. But from Will Smith should be in jail right now.
He should be. This is an apology by Smith to Rock.
No, but I'm saying Will Smith should be in jail. Chris Rock refused to file a police report.
Right. And, to me, and that's forgiveness.
Yeah, and LAPD basically said, hey, he refused to, but he.
You know, Leo Terrell, a lawyer, a Democrat lawyer, though, came out and said that the cops didn't need him to press charges to charge him.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Was it on public, on video, maybe?
I don't know, but the police did make a statement that that Rock refused to file a police report.
Right,
that was the exact language. And they said, but should he decide to do so in the future, we are ready to investigate the matter or something like that. Which, of course, investigating the matter is just looking at the video, again, if it were real. That's why I also think it's fake. Chris Rock is not a gangster rapper. He's not a thug or somebody from the hood. You know what I mean? He's not who's that guy? Suge Knight. He's not Suge Knight. He's not one of these guys who's liable to shoot you at the end of the day. So why wouldn't he file a report if it was real? If it was real.
Oh, well, that's obvious. I mean, that's part of the Hollywood circle. Keep it in house.
No, you know? I disagree, man.
Because, no, I'm not saying I disagree with you. I'm saying that's how it's being viewed.
No, I understand that. But I think if I'm Chris Rock, if Will Smith, if it's real, if Will Smith faces no consequences, what am I telling? Like, Chris Rock still does stand-up. You know what I mean? What does that tell the audience? If I insult you, I'm going to let you slap me?
Well, here, let me say this. One of two things are going to happen. He's going to create a comedy skit out of this.
I'm sure he will.
And shame Will Smith, and that's how he gets back at him.
Or how do you shame a cop?
Hold on. That's just an apology. I mean, or it's no big deal. But you shame him without a joke. I mean, oh, my God. How many alopecia jokes is he going to do in a night? I mean, that's how. You know, you start to, you know. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. That's one way. Or he's going to struggle, you know, because at the end of the day, like you said, nobody's going to see him with any kind of respect or anything of that nature. Yeah. All right, got a final one. Where did that name go? Where did that it's like, would he do it to this guy? Well, we know he wouldn't do it to Burt Reynolds. Frank Sinatra, he wouldn't do it.
Oh, he'd never make it up to Frank Sinatra.
Tom Hanks.
Huh?
Tom Hanks?
Probably.
You think so? I think Tom Hanks is one of those icons.
It would violate the white guy rule I stated earlier, but you mean physically? Physically, he could probably roll up on Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks, from what I understand and from what I've seen, one of the most docile people on the planet. Docile.
No, he is. Big John, any final words for the night?
No, I'm done. I've talked a lot. It was a great show. I felt we got a lot on the across tonight. So I'm glad that you were able to provide us with such interesting topics, William.
Look, I'm a pragmatic fool, but being pragmatic to me is the only way to go. And some of the stuff just makes you laugh. Some of it makes you shake your head, whether it's sports, entertainment, or whatnot. But hey, that's what Points on the Board is all about. Look, people, do not forget to visit sportsgrumblings.com, where you can see many of our other podcasts as well as our articles. You can learn what John thinks of being a libertarian. We have no guests, but hopefully we're going to be talking some more fantasy football or baseball down the road. And America, thank you so much to be hanging with two fantasy sports pioneers. Again, sportsgrumblings.com, and we will see you guys next time.
Peace.